Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast of Burnt Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burntorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. It helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends where you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, it's the Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's excited to onboard to the SEC, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
You know, what I'm really excited about is it's a conference that has a proper crimson team in it, a team that wears crimson with a little bit of pizzazz, you know, and backs it up and doesn't choke it away. That's not a shot at any particular other team who wears crimson in any other conference today. Hint, hint. No, we're talking Bama today, Gerald. This is going to be fun.
It's exciting times, Kyle. We're finally getting to preview football. So we are officially out of the wide receiver numbers and into the offensive lineman numbers. We are 79 days. You could keep that on your Twitter countdown, picture countdown, whoever you're doing it. But it's time to preview the big non-conference matchup. The Alabama Crimson Tide coming to the newly sold out Darrell K. Royal Texas Memorial Stadium. As of Tuesday, I think the only way to get tickets to that game is either pay. We're looking at four figures right now or buy season tickets, the only two ways to get into the game. But we're not here to talk about ticket prices. We're here to talk about what's going to happen on the field. And so we reached out to our friends over at Roll Bama Roll. And Brent Taylor, now new friend of the show, is here to help us preview the Crimson Tide. Man, Brent, how are you doing today?
Man, I'm doing great, and I'm happy to be a new friend.
And aren't SEC friends really the truly the best friends? We'll find out soon in a couple years officially.
we'll be best buds. No, I like you guys better when you're out of conference. Once you come in, we start getting some bad blood moments.
Fair enough.
To think Texas A&M was kind of cool. Now it's like I see what you guys didn't like.
Thank you for understanding. It's it has been a relatively nice reprieve, but I guess we're gonna see them soon. Let's talk about anything else.
So it seems like, and we were talking about this pre-show, like it's really easy to preview most of the Big 12 schools. It's like there's a question at quarterback. There's a question at wide receiver. And Alabama's like, how good is your Heisman Trophy winning quarterback going to be? So let's start there, because I think that's the big, at least the question I always like to know is like, been one repeat Heisman Trophy winner in the entire history of the trophy. And so when you have a guy like Bryce Young, who's probably rounding his last season on campus, going to look at the NFL sooner rather than later, like, what are the expectations for him leading Bama back to presumably the promised land this year?
Bryce is not going to repeat Heisman. It doesn't happen. There's going to be a major, you know, nationally a major push for look for anything wrong with this guy so we can give it to someone else. And that, you know, that's not just a anti-Bama thing. It's any Heisman winner that wins it too early. It's just how it goes. And then with Alabama specifically, all of our running backs got hurt last year. And so Bryce Young wound up carrying a lot more of the offense than really I think he was planning to do or anyone planned on him doing. And Alabama brought in a nice, shiny new transfer running back out of Georgia Tech. Plus bringing back all of the guys that got injured last year. So there's a huge stable of running backs, and I fully expect some of the passing volume to be dialed down. As for what I expect, I'd like to see a little better urgency from Bryce. There's a lot of, up until really the Auburn game at the end of last year, just kind of a lack of urgency from him. He took a lot of sacks, and we'll get into that as we talk about questions about this team. It's not all on him, but he held the ball a lot and took a lot of sacks. So that's something I want to see a lot of improvement from going forward. But he's a Heisman quarterback. The dude's great.
I'll save the sacks question for Gerald. He always focuses on the line. I like the flashy guys. So I'm going to ask you, there is, even though they threw the ball more, there is also a churn a bit at the receiver position. Jameson Williams, John Metchie, after putting three guys in the first round the year before, just a ton of skill position drain. Even at a program like Alabama, it's tough to just consistently replace. Obviously, Jermaine Burton came over from UGA, and a guy who Texas fans know pretty well, and JoJo Early. So who is going to be, when Bryce does drop back to pass, who is going to be his favorite target? Who should Texas fans be watching for come that Saturday?
Man, who knows? We have a wide open wide receiver group right now, and if you think Nick Saban's letting any scrap of rumors out of the close practice fields right now, then so Jermaine Burton's got to be the leader. He's a transfer out of Georgia. This is crazy. He was Georgia's leading receiver with only like 500 yards. So their tight end had like 1,000 or whatever it was. But as an actual receiver, he was their leader with, no catches. He would have been fourth on Alabama last year. But so the best, everything I've heard, Burton seems to be working with Bryce a lot, and those two are developing a lot of chemistry together. So I expect that to be our leader. There's also another transfer, Tyler Harrell, out of Louisville. And the dude is a graduate transfer that supposedly ran somewhere like a 4.19, 4.24, 40. It's another shot to see if we can, kind of fast. See if they can strike lightning twice like they did with Jameson Williams, just pulling a fast guy out of Ohio State and figuring out, this guy can actually be a good receiver. So there's a good chance both of Alabama's leading receivers are new transfers in. Quite a few of the players that were forced into action in the national championship last year, there was a couple of crucial fourth down drops here and there. They're gone. Which I guess you guys know one of those, Aggie Hall. I don't know. Oh, I did see. Is he actually on Texas's roster? I saw there was a kerfluffle that maybe he's not.
He is officially a Longhorn.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, have fun. The dude is a lot of fun on Twitter. He'll like tweet these random cryptic things just to get the fans kind of like, what's going on with him? And I think he does it just to mess with fans.
I appreciate the early 2000s MySpace posting style of social media. So I love to see it making a comeback there.
So, as for recruits, there are, I think, 5 freshman receivers coming in this year. Specifically, I would watch for Isaiah Bond. The guy is crazy, crazy fast. I don't see as like a full-time do everything receiver, but he very well could develop as one of those freshmen that you throw him a screen and he's gone.
So you mentioned when you were talking about the quarterbacks, the offensive line questions that are there, and that was one of the bigger surprises and probably the biggest struggle, frustration out of Alabama fans a year ago was a seeming step back in the offensive line play. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe there's been another change at the offensive line coach to hopefully address that. But you've got to replace Evan Neal. There's turnover there. What's going to the offensive line going to look like this year? And will Alabama look more like the Alabama of old that's just mauling people at the point of attack?
So in 2021, Alabama made the brilliant move of hiring NFL castoff Doug Marrone to be an offensive line coach is like a retirement swan song. And it failed pretty spectacularly. Kind of gets lost in Bryce's Heisman numbers was that this was by far and away the worst offensive line performance of Nick Saban's entire tenure. Basically, every offensive line metric out there, whether it's just base stats and tackles for loss, or getting into more of your advanced metrics, run stuffs, all of that, Alabama's offensive line was generally 100th or worse in almost everything. It was not pretty and got covered up a whole lot by Bryce Young running around. So, yeah, Doug Marrone is gone. And unfortunately, Evan Neal is too. And Neal was amazing. He was an amazing left tackle while the entire left guard to right tackle was falling apart. So there's a lot of turnover. Alabama returns right guard Emil Ekiyor. He's a third-year starter, is generally a strong run blocker. He's had some health issues basically his entire career on and off, but he is a long-term starter. And then left guard Javian Cohen was a first-year starter last year. He's probably more of a natural tackle. Fairly solid pass blocker. He's got a ways to go on run blocking still. So that's two guards. And past that, we got it. It's interesting. So you've got a couple of centers. One is Darian Dalcourt, who played last year and kind of rumblings behind the scenes was he wasn't doing well with a lot of the making calls part of being a center and ended up getting benched for Seth McLaughlin, who seemed to fix a lot of those line communication issues, but then got eaten alive by Georgia's Jordan Davis. he gave up like 100 pounds to the dude, so fair play. So, there's a battle between those two again going into this year, and the two tackles are wide open. There's five-star sophomore J.C. Latham that we all thought would be a starter last year, didn't make it. So maybe he's got it this year. There's Tommy Brockermeyer, another five-star. We thought might be a starter. Hasn't made it. Yeah. So far he hasn't really managed to even crack depth charts yet. So we'll still holding out hope on that one. There's a converted sixth-year tight end senior, Kendall Randolph, that we hope does not have to be the tackle. and then we went and stole a graduate transfer out of Vanderbilt. So he's most likely going to be the left tackle.
Texas has done an academic school grad transfer offensive lineman in the name of Calvin Anderson. He's playing in the NFL now, so it can work out pretty well, the one-year smart guy, big guy combo.
The kid from Georgia Tech sucked, though. We'll just say that out loud.
That is true. I will. I wasn't going to throw him directly under the bus, but yes, he did not.
I have before, and I'll do it again. Unafraid.
Didn't realize you have to also pass block, which it sounds like there might be some issues there. It you mentioned the Brockermeyers. Obviously, again, dad, family played at UT. There was hope the Texas boys would come home when mama called, but they made their way to Bama. Tommy, obviously, the bigger name of the two. Is anything from him? I know last year it seemed like exactly what you said. Everyone was looking for the step up, and it just didn't happen. Is there any buzz at all, or is he still a longer development project?
No buzz, really. We finally did actually see him in the spring game this year. He's playing second team right tackle. Got absolutely eaten alive. But, that's about it.
Tough to do. We'll talk about your defensive ends when we get there, because that's it's frightening. The last thing to talk about in the running game, obviously Brian Robinson going to the NFL. Jahmyr Gibbs, a guy who, you know, at least one person on Texas will be familiar with, right? His running backs coach also left Georgia Tech and came to Texas. So I don't know that gives us any type of insight on how to stop him, but he knows that he's good at very least. Is it pretty much his job just to come in and see the bulk of the carries, or will another Texas kid and Jace McClellan or anyone else get in that committee that Bama can at times be famous for in their backfield?
I think this is going to be a committee year. The fun thing about Nick Saban is he is absolutely alternated. There have been times where he had Derrick Henry and rode him into the ground for a year, or Najee Harris for two straight years. And then there's been times when they platoon Damien Harris, Josh Jacobs, Najee Harris, Bo Scarborough. So it really depends on the roster, and Saban is happy to go either direction. I think this is going to be a big platoon year. So Jason McClellan, I think McClellan would have been Alabama's leading rusher last year. And up until he seemed to be eating more and more of the carries away from Brian Robinson early on until he tore an ACL. So, man, those knees. But so I'm expecting McClellan to be the starting back this year. There's also Trey Sanders, who former five-star guy. He's a junior now. He might be a senior. He's a senior now, I think. But Sanders broke a foot his freshman year, then was in a car accident and just, like, shattered his pelvis his sophomore year. And really just got back onto the field at the end of last year. So he's there. He's really the veteran of the group. I'm not sure he's ever really making it back. But we'll see. So him and McClellan, and then now we've got Jahmyr Gibbs coming in, who, you know, Gibbs is, he's just so fast. But I think what's probably going to happen is Gibbs is going to be a receiving back.
Yeah.
And kind of the old Kenyon Drake role. If you remember when Alabama had Derrick Henry, they also had Kenyon Drake, who wound up being a third round draft pick and was used on a lot of change of pace plays, speed sweeps, and motioned out to receiver a lot. And I think that's what we're going to see from Gibbs. So Gibbs will be the all-purpose yards leader, but I think McClellan is the starting true tailback.
Well, I'll give one last word of warning. There is a five-star running back out of Aledo with a knee injury who Texas fans are sadly very familiar with, and Jonathan Gray, who just, you know, one of the greatest all-time high school running backs in general, but in Texas high school history. I, for the sake of just, you know, high school kids from Texas having great careers, hope that McClellan can break the Aledo knee injury five-star running back curse of Jonathan Gray and have a great career. Just, you know, wait until like the third week of the season to start it.
I'll let him know.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
Shoot him a DM or something. Just put in a word. So let's switch sides to the defensive side of the ball. And I think, you know, I talked about the offensive line being a surprise. I think the other surprise, at least for me last year, was the pass defense for Alabama gave up more chunk plays than I'm used to seeing through the air. I think the statistics are like, what, 6.6 yards per attempt defensively, which is the highest total since 2013. Now, Alabama did address some of that in the transfer portal almost immediately after the season was over, but do you think that's enough to like reverse that trend and keep things in front of them more frequently?
Yeah, I think that was mostly a product of injury to specific cornerbacks. Josh Jobe, that was the deep ball like that was not an issue for Alabama for most of the last few years or the early part of this season. Josh Jobe, the left cornerback, wound up a turf toe about halfway through the season, and Arkansas figured it out and just absolutely focused in on it. And he should have been benched a lot earlier than he was. It was a senior guy, had been a multi-year starter. You hated it, but the toe was bad. He was just getting roasted. Following that, the corner on the other side, Jalen Armour-Davis, a few games later, messed up his hip and, again, didn't really come out of the game as early as he should have. And once both of those guys came out, now we're starting true freshmen in a playoff game. And you're like, oh, this is great. This is fine. So I think that was the major part of the issue there. Coming into this year, the poor freshman that got thrown in against Georgia in the national championship is now year two and has that experience. He's a solid 6'1", five-star, former, you know, former five-star guy. and seemed to be one of those players. It's Kool-Aid McKinstry. That he seemed to be one of those players that Nick Saban likes a lot. He talks about him a good bit and has seemed to kind of mess with him a lot. So I think that's a good sign. The other spot, there's some different guys. There's JUCO transfer Kyrie Jackson, 6'3". He is the one that got beat for the game-winning touchdown against Georgia. So we'll see. We'll see if that was a first-game starter nerves or if he wins the job. But there's also former freshman All-American Eli Ricks that transferred in from LSU. Now, so far, Ricks is still on the second team behind Jackson. Whether that lasts until game one of the season, probably not. I fully expect it to be Ricks. And at that point, Alabama's got, you know, former five-star and freshman All-American, All-SEC. And they're all 6'1 plus with great speed. So I think they're in good shape.
I really thought Eli Ricks was fantastic his freshman year. I thought he was the better corner on that team with a pair of really good corners. But one position we know and one strategy, I guess, to not give up chunk plays is just sack the quarterback or tackle the running back before he gets out of the backfield. And you had a guy who did it as good as anyone I've ever seen in the Nick Saban era. I've heard people call him the best Alabama defender in Saban's tenure, which is certainly lofty praise. But maybe the biggest competition to his quarterback repeating for the Heisman is the defensive end. Texas fans obviously are familiar, Bama fans very familiar. Will Anderson, I think, just an absolute stud. 17.5 sacks, 34.5 tackles for loss, I believe, last year. We'll save Dallas Turner for a moment. Give us the secret insight here. We promise we won't share it with the Texas coaches. Has anyone ever done anything to successfully even slow down Will Anderson? Like, what do you...
Throw a quick screen to the other side of the field. that
hope
is
he gets
it.
Some bad sushi.
Yeah, hope he gets sick. And then hope him getting sick doesn't make him mad or something.
Right.
Will Anderson was the rightful Heisman winner last year, and I will stand by that to my grave.
You have no argument there. As a Texas fan who had literally no dog in the fight, I just hoped. I hate that it just goes to the quarterback on the best team most years, but I thought his season last year was just phenomenal. I hope that doesn't give any type of chip on his shoulder. But tell us about the rest, because you have some other premier edge rushers on this team, and Dallas Turner included. Who else might be getting to one of our young quarterbacks, whichever one is behind center?
So yeah, Dallas Turner kind of came on really halfway through the season last year. Freshman guy, we didn't really hear a whole lot about him leading up to the season, and he was a backup to Drew Sanders. And when Sanders hurt his elbow, I believe, Dallas Turner came in. He got roasted on a few passing plays. We're like, oh, great, true freshman. This is not going to be pretty. And a couple games later, it was like, oh, who was that coming off the left side? And it was Dallas Turner. And I'll be 100% honest, Dallas Turner has got a better speed rush than Will Anderson. So as powerful and explosive as Anderson is, Dallas Turner is a better edge speed kind of polish rusher like that. And that's terrifying. I fully expect this season Will Anderson's going to have a little bit of a decrease in his numbers. I think teams are going to double and triple team him. And I think Dallas Turner's going to get just as many sacks as Anderson did last year. 15, 16 plus. I think it's going to be nuts.
Awesome.
So, to go along with that, there's also another guy that is, what was his name? Hang on a second. I'm just brain blocked. But he is a...
Braswell?
Yes, Chris Braswell. Sorry, I was mixing him up with Iabi Anoma, who was the year before out of the same area and the same size. Okay, yes, Chris Braswell. So Braswell is a... five-star guy, came in. I was not very high on him as a recruit. I'm not sure. He kind of got that five-star early and then slowly decreased through the rankings. And when he came to Alabama, he was way, way undersized. But this offseason, He's bulked up a lot, and in the spring game, all of a sudden he was splitting first team reps with Anderson and Turner. And Nick Saban basically said, yeah, we have three starting pass rushers. And that's when I was like, oh, watch out for this guy. So we haven't really seen Braswell much. We haven't seen him in action a whole lot, but the coaches seem to think he is a guy this year.
So let's wrap up the formal part of this interview and get to really what people are going to hear for. So it's been a bit of a down season for Alabama, or a down tenure for Alabama. Just one national championship in the last 4 years. There are pre-K students that have not seen an Alabama national championship. So like, wow. What's the expectation for this season? And like, my son has never seen an Alabama or seen one Alabama national championship. That is just absolutely inexcusable. So like, what's the expectation, and when do you guys hope to see that national championship trophy again?
Man, natty or bust, right? That's every year.
Is it truly that? Is playoff? I mean, is it like, it's a down year, or even getting to the championship game? Is it considered a failure?
By the time that part of the season rolls around, yeah. Any loss is a failure. Sure. Going in, I would say last year, 2021, most fans did not expect Alabama to really make it there. We had, you know, a million first rounders on the team in 2020, just crushed all of college football. And we were kind of like, okay, we're breaking in an entirely new team in 21. We'll see what happens. It'll be cool. They really overachieved for most of 2021 compared to where we all thought they would be. And then, you know, then you get to the national championship, and at that point you're like, well, now I expect it. Why'd you have to lose? But, you know, a year ago, I would have told you 2021's not our year. 2022 is going to be great. Now, after last year, the way it ended, you're kind of like, okay, well, maybe we were better than we thought last year, and maybe we're still about the same this year. But I would say, yeah, this team should be better than last year's team, and last year's team was a couple of drives away from winning a national championship, so, and, you know, a couple of freshman receiver drops. So, yeah, I'd say expectation is a championship.
Us too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, every
preseason champions.
Absolutely undefeated every preseason. We equally put out incredible hype videos. So that's all you need. Let's take it now into the fun part of this interview. We do a rapid fire, just kind of whatever comes to your heart, to your mind. There is no wrong answer here. So let's start it off with a softball. Who does Nick Saban most want to bury beneath the earth this year? Steve Sarkisian, Kirby Smart, or Jimbo?
Oh, it's got to be Jimbo. Not even close. Dude didn't return his call. No, I think Saban has got... He's always seemed to have a soft spot for Sarkisian. So I don't think there's any issues there. And while most Alabama fans have kind of gotten annoyed at Kirby Smart, Saban seemed to continue to hold Smart in pretty high regard. Other than that one time he like tried to steal a transfer and all that. But... yeah, so those two are fine, and I think Saban seemed to like Jimbo too, and is still trying to like make it that way. But like, man, you're not going to return his phone call.
We've had a few more years of Aggie experience than maybe you have. If they've gotten into Jimbo's brain, it's just worms up there now, man. The Jimbo you knew is gone. He's been stolen.
So this, you know, it's the new era of NIL, and we know we already talked about Bryce Young, and Bryce Young has millions apparently of NIL deals out there. But if you've got a dream NIL pairing, whether it's somebody in the past that would just like, you could think that they would crush this, or somebody currently on the team, like, what is your dream like NIL and brand, like player and brand pairing for an NIL deal?
Oh, this is so easy. Kool-Aid McKinstry. Yeah. There is Kool-Aid. I mean, what more could you ask for? Kool-Aid needs to put him on a commercial, have him bust through a wall, maybe have an elephant bust through the wall while you're at it. And I'm in.
The fact that it hasn't happened yet, I just feel like, you know, what are you doing, marketing folks, NIL professionals? It honestly may be the easiest one in the whole country. All right, so this game, like, we haven't played in a while in football, right? There's obviously, you know, a memorable last time we played in a national championship. There are a lot of Texas fans who still think about that game, and McCoy's injury often is
changing the course of
our program. I wasn't going to bring it up.
It's okay.
We bring it up enough. It's fine.
Yeah. It still hurts. Still fresh wound. But there are a surprising number of familiar faces across both sides of these teams. So when you think about who will either be happiest to see each other, or again, to keep it in the rivalry, most likely to want to bury the other. You have players in Keelan Robinson, Jai Hall, Jaleel Billingsley on the Texas side, Jalen Milroe, former Texas recruit on Alabama side, the Brockermeyers, Texas legacies, and JoJo Early, who was, you know, a Texas lean before committing to Alabama. You also have the coaches, you know, Sark, Banks, Flood, Bo Davis, Milwee, now Nico Johnson just took a GA role. And then Coleman Hutzler on the Alabama roster, who was at Texas for a little while. Gerald and I both defended and liked him quite a bit. And then our new running back coach, Tashard Choice, was, you know, 2 years coached Jahmyr Gibbs. So who's the happiest? Who's going to be dapping it up before the game with the reunion, happiest to see each other? And who's going to want a little vengeance?
Oh man, Jeff Banks has got to be excited to come back. I mean, there are monkeys all around, right? So and I'm sure Sarkisian to be happy too. A bunch of these guys are generally leave with good impressions of them and Saban like each other, and they seem to get along pretty well. Keelan Robinson, I felt like left on pretty decent terms as well. But for the most part, fans have been like, hey, cheer him on. Let's watch this guy go. Jaleel Billingsley, this is not going to be good. That's one of the most piled upon players I have seen on our message boards in the entire time I've been writing for Roll Bama Roll.
Wow.
I couldn't tell you the number of nicknames and won't say them on air.
Appreciate that.
The only one that's really stuck has been Billboard. And so, yeah, there's going to be some animosity on that one.
Fair enough.
So if you're listening to this podcast and you're unaware that how are you listening to this podcast, we're glad to have you. But Texas is joining the SEC sometime. ? In the near future. And so we want to do a little bit of a brief like SEC orientation. And I think the first question that I always have is like, there's a team in every conference that everybody bullies, right? There's a team that everybody just piles on them regardless. And like, it's not cool to like pile on Vandy, right? Because Vandy is Vandy. But like, who's the team? Like, if we're going to come in and fit in with the cool kids, who do we need to bully on social media like as soon as we get there?
The thing with Vandy is it's not even that much fun to bully them.
Yeah,
you're just kind of like, man, this feels kind of gross, and also their fans are annoying, so like why are you even here? the team you really end up feeling kind of bad for a lot of times is Arkansas.
Okay.
You're like, you kind of got a cool uniform, that's cool, and you're up there in the Northwest, that's kind of close, so sure, I guess you're here. They are normally kind of good, so we'll cheer for you against outside of the SEC, but then everybody just kind of waxes the floor with you. Every so often they get kind of decent. So yeah, you can make fun of Arkansas a good bit. And you know, make bacon jokes or woo pig sueys or whatever they do.
That fits for us.
Yeah.
That works. I also love the geography that Arkansas is considered out there in the Northwest. That's, we have to reorient our SEC geography. I love it. That's perfect. So look, you know, Give us an SEC stereotype then for a couple other schools, and I'll let you pick your choice out of, you know, Auburn, Georgia, Ole Miss. You've already said Arkansas, Florida. Whoever you want to give us a couple, just something we should know. What are the general consensus of the Alabama fans of some of these other programs, so we can bring, you know, some knowledge back to our listeners.
Auburn is the Texas A&M of our state. That's all you need to know. That is all you need to know. Let's see. Ole Miss is the Alabama of their state without the success. So, Mississippi State has a lot of cowbells. For what it's worth, Mississippi State's kind of cool. We like them for the most part, other than their cowbells. They're a little weird. And you know enough about LSU. There's That they're the Cajuns. And so the fun one though, Tennessee.
Ah.
I'm loving it. I'm excited.
It is always, this is Tennessee's year. This is going to be their year. This is the year Tennessee is back. I swear it. This is the year. Get used to it. You will never see so many preseason Heisman quarterbacks as you do in that god-awful orange.
It is a bad shade. It is a bad shade of orange.
Terrible shade. Puke inside of a pumpkin.
And on that note, I think that's how we close this. Puke inside of a pumpkin. We might have our podcast title. Brent, thank you so much for taking some time out to do this silly interview. But and if folks want more of what you've got to offer, or if we're looking to beef up their SEC follows before Texas makes the move, man, where can they find you on the internet?
Follows at RollBamaRoll. Me and then a few of our other editors, manager, all kind of rotate tweeting from it. So you get a variety of bad tweets generally, and make normally schadenfreude, making fun of other programs. My personal Twitter. Yeah. My personal Twitter is btbama22. Don't tweet as much there because I save my best ones for the main account, but I retweet a lot. So yeah, that's it.
If the SEC is renowned for their football teams, their baseball teams, short order, they will be known for their podcasters as well, being the best in the business. So happy to join the ranks of the elite. Thanks, man.
I love it. Thank you, guys.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
All right, Gerald, let's now take a look at the world through burnt orange lenses. We talked a little baseball in our first show, and baseball will be coming soon when this releases on Thursday. But for now, we have some Ivan Melendez news. Ivan Melendez was named this week one of the three finalists for the Golden Spike Award, as well as one of five for the Dick Howser Trophy. Basically, the three big postseason awards. One of them has already been named the college baseball player of the collegiate baseball player of the year. So he's one for three, hoping for a clean sweep. The Howser Trophy will be announced very shortly. That is on the 17th. And the Golden Spikes will come out a week later on the 24th. So Melendez, honestly, is the best choice for both of these. I'm not going to disparage the very good years by the other two, and I guess in the case of the Hauser, the other four finalists. But Melendez's year, I think, one final, I've said it many times, and he keeps adding stats to it. In the entire country, there are six players who have 200 at-bats and have hit over 400. Only one of them is in a power conference, and that's Ivan Melendez. So if you told me Ivan Melendez was a slapping speedster right fielder who, you know, sprays hits and gets singles and steals bases, I would understand that he's really, really good at that, right? To hit 400, that's really good. It's utterly impossible that he's doing it as the power-hitting player that he is. He's looking to become the eighth Longhorn ever to hit 400 or better in a season, the first since Dustin Majewski in 2002. So basically, again, in this century, would be only the second to do that. And a reminder, as much as we love Dustin Majewski, he did not hit balls over the Green Monster in center. He didn't clear scoreboards in left center. He did not go to major league ballparks and put them in the stands with such frequency. So just incredible. Like, Melendez, incredible. Greatest offensive season in modern baseball era. And I say that with no burnt orange bias. That is just the fact.
I mean, and it's not just that, like, he's not the guy who swings at everything and puts him over the fences, though, because, like, he's, again, like you said, batting 400 in conference play, which is nuts, and he's on track with that to break the school slugging percentage. It's like 70 years old. So like Melendez is doing things on a level that we hadn't seen and we honestly may never see again. Like, I think we have to take a moment and appreciate that, like, this dude is going to be one of the, or already is at this point, and has the potential to just build on his resume as one of the all-time greats in Texas baseball history. And I think, and again, we say this every week when we talk about it, we thought it was hilarious that he was going to come back and try to improve on last year, to improve his draft stock, and he did that. He improved his batting while also playing a position. He wasn't just the DH. That's the crazy thing to me. And we said it on Tuesday's show, like, his single season home run number qualifies him for the all-time home run list, regardless of what he did last year. Just this year's 32, which hopefully he'll build on that in Omaha, that number is good enough to put him on the all-time career home run list. Like, this guy is one of the greats, and we really have to just sit and bask and enjoy that we get to sit and watch that type of player.
It was unbelievable, just horrid that he had an error, really call it an error. It was a ball that bounced 10 feet up in his face off that concrete that they called dirt at ECU's jungle. But that was his second error of the season. Played every game at first base, a team that gets ground balls all the time. Two errors on the season. He was equally an incredible defensive player this season to go with, again, breaking 73-year-old records, breaking the all-time home run record, breaking the BB Corps era home run record, leading the nation in slugging, OPS, total bases, school record, RBIs, which he's close to a school record. The crazy thing is, right, like, he's also tied for fifth all-time in on-base percentage because he's like Gerald said, he's seeing the ball, he's not swinging at everything, he's taking walks, and now especially the end of the season, he's not getting as many pitches, he's getting intentionally walked or pitched around, so his on-base numbers just keep going up as well. He might end up breaking that by the end of the season. Just again, this season that he's having deserves to be put into context outside of baseball. It is one of the greatest seasons that a Longhorn in any sport has ever put together. Keeping it with national awards, Peyton Stearns was named the Honda Sport Award for tennis. If you're not familiar, the Honda Sport Award basically goes to the top female in each sport in the country. She's the first tennis player at Texas to earn the Honda Sport Award and the first Longhorn to claim one in any sport since Courtney Okolo in 2016. The last before that, you have to go another decade to Kat Osterman, who did it twice in 05 and 06 for softball. But just puts, again, Peyton Stearns in some rarefied air, puts her in where you have to talk about one of those all-time Longhorn performances of any person, any sport, any season.
Again, this feels like the era that you and I were on campus when it was like we got to watch Vince Young and Colt McCoy and Kat Osterman and Kevin Durant and TJ Ford and LaMarcus Aldridge. Like, it's like Texas sports feels like that for everything but football right now. And even that, we've got Bijan Robinson and we've got like those types of guys. It's wild to think about the level of excellence everywhere on campus, and the football team will catch up. It's fine.
It absolutely will, Gerald. And another team that has some excellence that needs to be awarded, the golf team. That's another national championship team. Some awards came out. Seniors Pearson Cootie and Cole Hammer, as well as junior Travis Vick, all earned spots on the All Big 12 golf team. And that's not anything to scoff at. Remember, the season ended basically with OU and Oklahoma State is like 1-2 in men's golf. There are some really good golf in the conference this year. Texas just happened to be the last standing of them, and you know, when you get to match play, you never want to see Texas. But just an incredible feat, along with the four Longhorns who were named on any of the All-American teams, including honorable mention. So really great for the players, and good to see some honors for an incredible season.
And adding to that, you know, Coach Fields won his ninth Big 12 Coach of the Year. He's been there for a quarter century, so nine honestly feels a little light. I feel like they probably shorted him a couple, but that's neither here nor there. But that, like, this was the year that I think Texas had to put it all together, because they had the Cooties and they had Travis Vick, who were on to bigger and unfortunately better things. And like, Fields really showed like what he can do with elite talent. So I think that's going to just you know, when you win with elite talent wants to come and win with you. So I think this is going to bode well and pay dividends for Texas in the long term as it comes, as it pertains to men's golf and the future recruiting.
Absolutely, Gerald. And speaking of elite talent, who is moving on to, you can call it bigger things. It's nothing better than Texas, but bigger things. one of our favorites, a person who's just has a career as a professional social media clapback artist, if she tires of the career she's embarking on. But Mary Iacopo was just recently signed, sealed, and delivered to the, and I want to make sure I get this correct, the Smash It Sports Vipers of the WPF, the Women's Pro Fast Pitch League, one of the two leagues that drafted her. Both her and Jocelyn Allo were drafted in two different leagues. And what I love to see is that the Vipers were able to sign two friends, because they are friends off the diamond, even if their teams and fans may hate each other. Two really good friends who all year we've seen retweeting each other and congratulating each other for their Player of the Week honors, or when Allo hit her, you know, 1,313th home run, or whatever. I don't remember the exact numbers. But you just saw that these two were friends, and I love that they both signed for the same team to go play pro. I love that the options to play pro exist in softball now, because I think what you saw in this run was that Texas was the Cinderella team, but softball is just a fun TV product. It is fun. It's faster than baseball. It's usually more high scoring. It's a good TV product, and I think Mary Iacopo fits right in that. She, you know, had some sass. She had some big plays. You know, she's a great defensive catcher. Had to throw him out. Had some tag him out. You know, had some home runs in the run. Like she's made for the moment, as you've seen off the field. Is absolutely made for the moment. Don't please ever come for Mary Iacopo on social media. It doesn't ever work out.
She absolutely just drags people, and I love it. Petty is my native tongue. And I absolutely love people being petty on social media, and it's just absolutely beautiful.
Now, Gerald, a couple Longhorns who have completed that phase, their professional career, move on to the retirement phase, but still raking in the honors. We have former Longhorns linebacker and your favorite, Derek Johnson, and former offensive lineman Dan Neal were both named to the 2023 College Football Hall of Fame ballot.
It's rare that you see back-to-back years with players from the same school. The College Hall of Fame is weird about that. Like, they generally try not to put multiple guys in from the same school. So not just seeing two in one year, but seeing two the year after Kenneth Sims joined a year ago. I've told this story before. Derek Johnson's the reason why I ended up at the University of Texas. And so, like, seeing him, and not, like, personally, I just watched him do some incredible things on the football field. And I was like, yeah, I want to go there. And just be in the same stratosphere as those people. So it's always great to see him get recognized for being incredible, because, well, he is absolutely incredible.
Texas trying to get to 25, currently 24 Longhorns in the Hall of Fame. So if either or both of them make it, they will put Texas over the quarter century mark. A fan favorite, a guy who certainly earned his status as a Longhorn legend, but does have 1 year of eligibility, and announced earlier this offseason that he would be spending it elsewhere. The decision finally came for Courtney Ramey, where he's going to play his last year of basketball. Now, we knew that Ramey was a defensive specialist. I think for his MBA stock, he did the draft test and then decided to come back. I'm sure what he heard is that he needs to demonstrate his ability to kind of have the more consistent and rounded offensive game. So he went to a team that knows how to score some points, certainly. And he announced this week he will be taking his talents to the Pac-12 to join the Arizona Wildcats.
I mean, he took kind of a couple of like backhanded shots at Coach Beard and Coach Smart, but I mean, it seems like he's again, you and I will never fault a guy for going to where they think they need to be, and they think it's going to be the best for their career. And so I think Courtney has found a place where he feels like he's going to be able to thrive and show off what he can do and end his college career on a high note, what he thinks is going to be on the right foot. And so we wish him nothing but the best, especially because he didn't go to West Virginia and Texas doesn't have to play him. So good for you. Enjoy it in the desert.
It sounded like Duke was the third of those options, but I get it. He basically, you know, he was in Texas, the Houston, the first chapter of Top Chef Houston, and then, of course, they finished in Tucson. So it's a very natural Top Chef transition that he did, so I totally get the thinking there. But no, Gerald, you don't get to play at UT for multiple years or go to Pac-12 schools unless you're pretty smart. And what we saw was that 121 Longhorn student-athletes featured in the 2022 academic All Big 12 team, 96 first team members and 25 second team. A lot of smart people associated putting the student in student athlete.
I would not have been an academic All Big 12 athlete, so it's great to see that people that were doing more than I did for the university getting those honors. And again, we this is one of the reasons why we highlight the other sports and the other athletes on campus, because they are doing incredible work both on the field and in the classroom, and the student athletes all deserve their spotlight and their flowers because they're doing an absolutely incredible job and representing the university as they should.
Representing the Big 12 as they should, because that's who the conference is currently. But Gerald, I'm curious, we'll end on this one, about your thoughts. We talked SEC football already, Alabama and Texas. We know Texas is going to the SEC with OU, but it was announced this week that the new Big 12 members, U of H, BYU, Cincinnati, and UCF, would be joining the Big 12 in 2023. Read the tea leaves, Gerald. What does that mean?
Honestly, I don't know. Like, I assume that Texas and OU will be leaving before that, but I also could see a world where broke OU puts the ankle bracelets on us and keeps Texas from getting out before that. A 14-team conference would be very weird, and I honestly think the Big 12 may do everything within its power to keep Texas and OU in to, like, show off. Like, can you imagine if UCF or BYU or any of these teams beat Texas and OU in their last year in the Big 12? Like, they'll just ride that for the rest of their lives. Like, I imagine that the Big 12 might do that, but hopefully it means that Texas and OU only have one more year left in this conference.
Well, former Big 12 teams now in the SEC do make cups about regular season wins, so maybe the new teams will take after and bring the cup making back to the Big 12. That's an Aggie shot. Gerald, that's it for me for the burnt orange lenses. I agree with you that I want to see Texas go as soon as we can, but for the time being, we are in the Big 12, and for the time being, that means every time Texas and OU meets in a national championship, it's happened twice, could have happened three times if they put us on opposite sides of the CWS bracket, so it won't happen a third time, but it's happened twice already this year where we've split 1-1 for national championships. That just it can't make the commish feel great about the state of affairs for that conference. But we will leave our shots at the commish to the hilarious running gag of when you post the image of him every time Texas or OU does something. But we will leave it at that and exit the Burn Orange Legends and head into everyone's favorite segment, Gerald. Godzillatron, what are you watching? Your giant screen.
A lot going on. I always like to start with, like, my dad recommendations, my dad-zillatron. Family night, movie night this week was Clifford the Big Red Dog. Yes. I would say it was what I expected, except for, like, all of the random cameos. Like, David Alan Greer is in it. Kenan Thompson is in it. Rosie Perez is in it, like, randomly. There's, like, a lot of good cameos, and there are a lot of people that are used kind of for a couple of specific jokes. So it's fine. It's good. Not a ton that you have to, like, awkwardly hope your kids don't repeat. So it was solid. My wife has these shows that she watches that, like, she watches when I'm in the room doing work next to her but not necessarily paying attention. And one that she thought was going to be this is a show on HBO called Selena and Chef. And if you haven't seen it, it's Selena Gomez, pop star Selena Gomez, and a random chef every episode. And so there are short cooking shows, and I love cooking shows because I'm a married father of three and over the hill. But, like, it started during COVID, during isolation. She lives with her and her roommate, and she's not a great cook, and so she would Zoom or Skype with these chefs, and they would teach her how to cook a nice meal for herself. They deliver all the groceries to her, and then then she'd cook it. And so it's like just, I don't know how to describe it, but it's just like wholesome in this like incredible way. And like, I'm bothered by her like knife skills though. Like the finger safety in her kitchen is not high and I'm not a fan of it. I've watched like 6 episodes and in like 25% of them, she's cut herself. And I'm like, just stop it. Like just get better knives. You're a millionaire. Get better knives. And also like, don't use 2 hands when you're chopping stuff. Her roommate is absolutely worthless. Like, she just like, she's texting half the time, like, you're on TV, like, put your phone down. Plating's not great, but like the whole crux of it is like she's learning how to cook, and then every episode they donate to a different charity of the chef's choice. And so Aaron Sanchez has a scholarship fund for minority students trying to get into culinary school, and you've got Jose Andres and his feeding the world charity. And so like all those, so like there's a $10,000 donation going out in every episode. So it's just fun. And then we got into it because I just finished listening to, I'm an audiobook, and I'm gonna butcher, Kwame Onuachi from a couple of seasons ago of Top Chef. I just finished his book, and the episode that he was on, and it was like fun and we had a good time with it. And apparently like Selena Gomez, and they were like flirting the entire time. And so I'm not like a celebrity shipper, but I would be totally down for that.
Yes.
And so like, one, that book is incredible. If you're into like food and food culture and that, like, check it out. But also like, this show is super fun to watch.
Yeah. Love that guy. He was on this season of Top Chef in Houston representing with our local Chopping Block, a very delicious Nigerian restaurant. If you're in Houston, in the new Houston Post, HTX, but no, a book that I read, I did an audiobook, but I actually read, I was in Mexico last weekend, and it's a short flight from Houston. It's like an hour and a half, so you can't get too much book reading done. I didn't take it to the pool with me either, so I didn't get too far. And I'm about a third of the way, maybe a little bit more done, is Pappyland, which I think my wife, I'm a tactile book reader. My wife is a Kindle reader, and she, I don't know if it was on, I must have had it saved on a, you know, to buy list at some point. It's a couple years old. It's but she had it popped up, and they said, here's a $5 coupon for a $5 book. So do you want it free on your Kindle? So sure. So she downloaded it for me, and it was my first Kindle experience. First of all, pretty good. Not bad. Honestly, I like holding a book.
Pretty solid.
But not bad. I enjoyed the Kindle. I will say that. But what I really enjoyed is, and I know I still have some more to read, is Wright Thompson. I read it very slow because Wright's a great storyteller, and I try to soak up every detail. But also, I read and I highlight, and I think, how can I emulate that? Because I think, you know, Spencer Hall has a lot to say, and I'd love to see that boxing match. But Wright Thompson, I believe, is our greatest living sports writer, and he could be on a short list of our greatest living writers. He writes about sports the way that I care about sports, in that the box score typically doesn't matter much, but talks about the narrative. And just one of my favorite and inspirational heroes. But Pappyland is specifically about the Pappy Van Winkle story, and he tells a little bit of his own story through it. And there's some sports sprinkled in, but it's not a sports book specifically, but it's about the history of bourbon, and I spent some time in Louisville and did a little dabbling a couple years ago myself and learned a little bit. But he just obviously goes layers and layers deeper, and talks about the horses because he loves the horses, so maybe that's the sports tie-in. And I got to know the horses when I was in Louisville, so I love it. It's a very good book, and it's Wright Thompson, and he talks about his dad, and he talks about Pappy Van Winkle, and he talks to Pappy's grandson, and about the familial scars and legacy, and it's just an interesting read. It's a story I didn't fully know before I got into this one. I haven't finished, so maybe I really don't know it. But the other thing that I took in, so I read that, but I did watch something on Netflix. I admittedly hadn't heard of this. Maybe everyone else had, and I just was completely behind, but it popped up immediately as a recommendation when I opened Netflix. It's called Hustle. If you don't know about 12 to 19 year old Kyle, boy did I love Adam Sandler. There I had a period where I just, the man had a grip on me. But I, as late stage Sandler, I probably have not seen one of his films. Click, Punch Truck Love, I don't know. It's been a few years. I've missed Grown Ups 1 through 17. I've missed Funny People, or the one where he dresses like different. I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of it. Admittedly, we've gone different directions, Mr. Sandler and I. But Hustle was great, actually, surprisingly. Juancho Hernan Gomez of the basketballing Hernan Gomez's, if you remember the phrase I eloquently busted out when we played Dayton in the women's. His sister played Texas in the first round of the women's March Madness, and he is the star and a handsome, believable legend who's the base of the story, and it won't spoil anything, but Adam Sandler is a scout, an NBA scout, who was never much of a player, but played well enough before an injury that he had some connections, right, in college as a point guard. And an injury robs him of that, and he works his butt off to scout the world to find the next star. This is a LeBron James production, so you see a lot of people who are represented by Clutch in this one, but they get a really, like, a ton of NBA talent and stars in it. It's a basketball story through and through, but it's also, you know, it's an interesting fish-out-of-water story. There's nothing super unpredictable about it. It's a very, like, oh, this is going to happen, then this is going to happen, but you're not upset about that. You know, it's a good popcorn movie. It's fun to see all the cameos. Like, they very clearly got... Oh, I saw Uncut Gems, so that's the last one I saw. But like in Uncut Gems, where they have some NBA stars, but they didn't really have the logo and license and, like, approval of the NBA, this felt very different, and I wonder if that signals something with what LeBron James means to media. Like, when LeBron wants to make a movie, if he just gets full access to anything he wants, which includes shooting in the middle of a game, the film, like, it's LeBron, so I think it's going to be different. But Adam Sandler was great, like Punch-Drunk Love or Spanglish, like a little bit more of a serious than slapstick Sandler kind of works for me, so he was great. I thought Mr. Hernan Gomez was great. I thought Anthony Edwards, the young Minnesota Timberwolves player who's kind of his rival and just an otherworldly smack talker, was incredible. It's as good of movie sport playing smack talk as I've ever seen. And that's not, you know, to knock the Doctor Strange basketball episode scenes or any of that, but it was fun. It's a solid 7. Just go watch it if you like basketball. You'll like this. If you like Adam Sandler, you'll like this. If you like, you know, Spanish streetballers, you'll like this. So I liked Hustle a lot. Maybe it's no expectations, but I enjoyed.
I'll have to check it out. I've heard a lot of people seen it mentioned on the socials a few times. So I'll have to, that feels like a Gerald watch without my wife, but we'll try to find some time for it. But that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Texas will exorcise the demons of the Colt McCoy injury.